You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ.
Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me?
Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud?
Hey, too late.
It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
It's not that early, actually. Joining me.
Yeah,
it is?
Well, for you.
But
it's the middle of the morning for me.
Yeah, but when you're in the late night entertainment business, what time would you normally, what was normal in terms of going to sleep and getting up? Those are crazy hours.
Yeah, I'd usually go to sleep around anywhere from midnight to 2 a.m.
Right.
I'd get up about 9, go do the book work, bake my bread. This is when I had the original Sanders, and I was the chef and baker and everything.
Right.
What
happens? Let me ask you this. Do you think most people go through a period because people that stay in that business, they're no stranger to a good time, right? And that's got to be...
Oh, hell no. That's part of the rush.
Yeah. That's part of doing it is they like a good time. Is that a challenge at times? I mean, because you're around liquor all the time, that's not the healthiest, I would think, endeavor. Is that something that you got to learn how to master, or do people just learn?
Oh, absolutely, you have to learn how to deal with that. I came from an alcoholic family.
Oh,
and
I didn't know that.
And it was, yeah, and it was a very dangerous situation, and I have no tolerance for mean drunks, and. When I got a buzz, I was good time Charlie. I also, it scared me into controlling my consumption. Yes, there are times when you get in your cups, for sure. But I never wanted to go so far that I could never drink again, like alcoholics, you know. That's it. And both of my sisters are alcoholics and have been in AA for 30, 40 years.
Wow.
My brother and I had the hell scared out of us with the drinking out of control, mean drunks in our family. So, and around us. And so, yeah, we like to get a buzz. I've always liked to get a buzz. Not every day. But sometimes, yes, I would. And sometimes I could go for weeks without having a cocktail or just maybe a glass of wine with my meal. But that's how I approached it. But I love throwing a party every day.
Okay, I want to talk to you about that because you you have younger guys working for you.
Yes.
And they're out late at night and they work in, there's a bar with the restaurant. And so you get done with work, you hang out. Talk to me about monitoring that? That had to bring its own challenges, yes?
Yes. I pretty much said, you get a shift drink when you're done and then you have to get out of here. I did not want my staff hanging around the bar. Now, if the kitchen crew or some of the service crew all the customers were gone, and I was still in the house. We would have a bump together, maybe roll some dice, play a little cards. Not every night. This is, you know, not even once a month, but occasionally. But I kind of ran a pretty tight ship with that, and tried to instill that in my guys. They all knew about my family's history. I made a point of telling servers, you know, if you're drinking on the job, you're not working. Though it was, I had an occasional beer while I was working on the second shift, not on the first shift.
Well, so let me see. So was it always something, the people that work for you, being around alcohol, they're late night people now, and that's it. That's kind of its own different subset. Were you always conscious to keep an eye on that?
I tried to, but I didn't want to interfere.
Right.
People had to find their own way. I always pointed out what my experience have been. That's how I educated and how I dealt with it when I worked in Europe, how I handled it to my staff here in the States. But I didn't preach to them like, oh, don't drink, it's evil.
Right.
In the last few years of my, the last probably 20 years being in the business, I didn't like people coming to work high, you know, like on weed. Or if I noticed that, I sent them home. It's an individual thing that you have to deal with yourself. You point things out, but you don't try to manage them, because I was no saint. But I did know that I ran a great joint, and people had good times when they came into my restaurants, and that was my point. But when people offered me drinks at the bar and I was working, I had a thing with my bartender to pour club soda with a lime or lemon in it instead of alcohol, and that was that. That's how I would deal with it. Because if I drank with everybody that wanted to buy me a drink,
yeah, hello,
I'd be passed out every night.
Right. Right. But you, so, but as the owner operator, you, you know, you would have to, you make your rounds around the room, and right? So that's a nightly occurrence. Having a son, both my sons work for you. I mean, and I'll tell you what, when you send a 15, 16-year-old kid down to become a dishwasher, they see a different, they haven't seen the stuff that they see. They didn't see that stuff. They didn't see that stuff in high school yet.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
And not the way I roll.
Well, no, but there are different people that work in the late night food and drink business, you know? I mean, it's very much a lifestyle in terms of, you know, you go to work at what time? 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're getting off at, you know, midnight, 1 in the morning. And you're probably hanging out with your friends and going to another bar and maybe having a drink or whatnot. And so, as a parent, I know that, you know, I used to keep an eye on it and to make sure that, you know, they were on the straight and narrow. But, I'd imagine as a business owner, it's something that, you know, that you gotta keep an eye on, because if you don't, I mean, you own a liquor store back there with a huge liquor cabinet, and the potential for something to go wrong is, you know, something that you live with on a daily basis. So anyway, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you your thoughts on
that's an absolute great discussion, Mac. You have to explain the pitfalls of the business when you hire somebody if they're new, like J-Mac, or who whoever I hired, and they were rookies, I would, if they wanted to be a cook or a server or a bartender, I'd explain the facts of life in the business and what can happen and what you have to avoid. And it's up to them to listen and to apply that to their situation, whichever that, whatever that might be. So,
all right,
you know, it's a great business. It's a fun business. But it's also a very intoxicating business,
right,
in that it can suck you into certain patterns if you're not in control of who you are.
Yeah, that are very destructive. It's already hard enough if you have a family, if you're married and have a family, because you're not at home at night. You know, you're out working.
Yeah.
And so, and that's tough. So your wife's at home watching TV by herself. If you have kids, they're at home by yourself. So it's just tough. Any thoughts on the shooting in Florida? I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you.
Well, I just, it's the same old shit. School shooting every 60 days, they said yesterday.
What, 20?
I think it's just, it makes me sick to my stomach. I get so infuriated, yes, it's a partly a mental issue, but for me, and you know, we've had this discussion privately, I just don't think there should be an assault weapon on the market, except for soldiers. It's just the way I feel. It's not an infringement on the Second Amendment, in my opinion, but there is no reason on this God's earth for anyone to get their hands on an assault rifle of any type. There's plenty of guns that can be owned legitimately and proper taught and background checks. You can buy an assault rifle in Florida at 18. You can't buy a pistol until you're 21. Now, I didn't understand that when I heard it, but it is. It's the way they roll. So, but that's just my opinion. And, it's in the minority, obviously, with, legislators. But if you poll the American public, it's gonna be about, 80% or so for background checks and the ban of assault rifles. But that's just me. It's not an argument that I wanna make. But that's how I might feel in my gut, and it's nauseating when I see these youngsters, or the Las Vegas shooting, 50 people dead, 500 people wounded, and come on, man. It's just, did Congress do anything? They did sweet fuck all, except move their lips. And so, the only solution I see is if people really are upset and tired of this life happening every 60 days or so, then change your congressmen or your senators. Vote them out. But the NRA has such a hold on everybody with the money they dole out. That's just about all I can say about that.
I heard something interesting that the NRA doesn't dole out that much money. What they do dole out though is between California and the coastal communities of Washington D.C. and the Northeast. There's a ton of people that vote that own guns.
Yeah.
And what they do control is they control or have influence over a lot of voters who own guns, who hunt, who don't want the government in their business. And I was watching this thing about the NRA that talked about the actual amount of money that they dole out. And they said, you know, it's not that much. But what they do control is they control whether they'll oppose your bid for reelection or not. And they said that, and then ultimately it's the voters that give the NRA the power that they have, because they speak for an awful lot of people that live in flyover country and that elect a lot of people. So it was interesting. I don't think Congress isn't going to do anything. We'll hear the same song and dance.
They got the smallest stones in the world.
Yeah. No, it's what they do. And then, so to me, the only thing, I think the majority of this is mental health, you know, because even if we ban assault weapons, you can get one, you can get a rifle and turn it into one with not too much work. So, I mean, if the people that are bent on doing this are going to find a way to do it, you can buy a ghost gun that's not even a finished rifle, and they'll mail you all the parts and the things to machine it with. All you got to do is get a drill out and do it. And you have a pistol or a rifle that doesn't even have a serial on it, because it's not considered a weapon because it's not a finished firearm. So to me, there's that ship has sailed relative to weapons. You know, 300 million weapons in the United States. The thing that you have to do is, I think what the Israelis did is you have to harden your schools. You have to hire, in my opinion, you hire retired police officers, and you pay them cash because they're already retired, and you put up fencing and cameras, and you harden your school. There's no such thing anymore as an open campus, right? So we don't do that anymore, and you make it extremely difficult. And the other thing that the Israelis did is there are teachers that carry weapons. All of it concealed, but they carry weapons. And they don't have that anymore. And so they locked down their schools after they fortified them. So I don't think there's anything else that you can do than to treat a school. And people will lament, like, oh, no, I don't want to see that happen. You know what? You don't have a choice anymore. This happens to
you. Yeah, you do. Look, Australia in 96.
Tim, stop. Don't even go there. Don't even go there. We're not Australia. We're not doing that.
Okay, I have opinions, I have feelings, and
but the country's not going to go there.
Well, I know they're not, but that doesn't mean I care.
All right.
Well, this is America.
Well, you could go there, but the country's not.
Well, we'll see.
All right. Let's talk about food.
Yeah. What do you want to?
Now you're pissed because we're not Australia.
No, it has nothing to do with it, Matt. You're right. We're not Australia. My bad. The thing is, it's just disappointing to me, Matt, that this country can't get their shit together and regulate weapons righteously.
Hey, I want to ask you a question, because
I don't want to deny one American their right to bear arms.
Right.
That is not what we're talking about. It's military weapons on the streets that anybody can purchase or make is all total bullshit. And that's all. Now, let's talk about Easter.
Switzerland has a relatively high gun ownership rate. There's no official...
Sure. You know what they are in Switzerland? They carry their guns home on their bikes, and every Sunday, 2 weeks a month, weekends a month, you see them riding along the highway on a bicycle with their automatic weapon strapped on their back, going to target shoot. And in Switzerland, they have railroads going inside of mountains with 200-bed hospitals, ammunition dumps. they're a wee bit more civilized than we are. They've been a country for 750 years, so.
Switzerland have?
What's that?
Switzerland has?
Yes, they've been an incorporated country for over 700 years. When I was living there, they were celebrating their 715th birthday. Amsterdam was celebrating their 700th anniversary as an incorporated city. All of Europe is much older and gets it better than we do. We're a young country, 230 years old and hanging in there.
This is from the BBC. Civilian firearms per 100 people. The United States, 90. Yemen, 55. Switzerland, 45. Finland, 44. Yeah. Switzerland. And they have relatively low crime.
Yep.
All healthy Swiss men ages between 18 and 34 are obliged to do military service and all are issued with assault rifles or pistols, which they are supposed to keep at home. 20 years ago, the Swiss militia was a sizable force of around 600,000 soldiers. Today, it's only a third of that size, but until recently, most former soldiers used to keep their guns after they had completed their military duties, leading to lots of weapons being stored in the attics or cupboards of private Swiss households.
Mm-hmm. And did you also know that you have to go, every year for 2 weeks until you're 50 years old to a training facility, military training facility in Switzerland? That when I lived there, that's what the rule was in the 70s. And you know, they're responsible about their weapons that they keep in their houses and, they know how to use them.
In 2006, a champion Swiss skier, Corinne Ray Bellet, and her brother were murdered by Corinne's estranged husband, who shot them with his old militia rifle before killing himself. Since that incident, gun laws concerning army weapons have tightened, although it's still possible for a former soldier to buy his firearm after he finishes military service. He must provide a justification for keeping the weapon and applying for a permit. They no longer issue ammunition either. It's just interesting.
But that's Europe. That's Europe. And it's not the States.
Top five gun places where there's gun homicides. Number one is?
Chicago.
No, nations, gun homicide. Number one is?
No idea.
Mexico.
Okay.
Mexico is 10 homicides per every 100,000 people.
Well, of course.
The United States has 3 per every 100,000 people. Chile has 2.25. Turkey and Switzerland each have about 0.5.
Interesting.
The other piece of this is the whole mental health piece, but anyway.
Of course it is. It's terrible.
We don't seem to be too comfortable, though, infringing on their rights. Do you know what I'm saying, Kim? I mean, you grew up in a day and time where every county every state had a sanitarium, right?
Yes.
And people got sent to that.
Yes.
But we don't have those anymore. Most of the people that were in those places are, they're all homeless now, wandering the streets of of the West Coast. Because the weather's so nice. So I don't know. I there's unsettled issues. And again, the sad part is, this seems to be the one, you know, the guy contacts the FBI and the kid's using his own name. It's like, we can't run that to ground. God dang.
I saw that on TV this morning and I thought, what the fuck? The FBI gets handed the whole page, the web page of this guy that killed everybody.
No. He just made a comment on the page. It wasn't his page.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
here's the issue. Kind of like after September 11th, and give me your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
The FBI must get, you know, a ton of that stuff. How much time, in addition to all the rest of the work they do, do you devote to it? And that's legitimate. It was like after September 11th, people pointed and said, see this report buried in a stack of, you know, 6 million other reports.
Yeah.
This report, well, you didn't know that at the time. And there was the source was unknown. It was just a piece of stray information that threatened something.
Yeah, it was.
And so there was no other information. And when we tried to track anything else down, there was nothing else. Here's my question relative to this. I talked to a couple cops about it yesterday. So the FBI takes the guy's name. They went out and visited the guy. Did they not run the guy's name through the
database?
Well, there's a whole series of different databases, but I guess looking for this name as a felon, or in the gun registry, looking for if this person owns or has purchased a person with this name, and then you get a printout of, let's just say, for the sake of discussion, 50-something guys, because he spells his name with a K like the Greeks do, Nicholas Cruz, right? Hispanic last name,
yeah.
Greek first name. I would say that's relatively unique, right?
Yeah.
It's relatively unique. So, but you're still going to have a number of people. So let's just say you get 50 things that bounce back. Okay, well, everybody over the age of 50, I'm not really interested, okay? People between the ages of 18 and 20, I'm most interested in. And anybody that bought an assault type of weapon, I'm really interested in. So, look, I'm not an FBI agent. I just play one on the radio. I don't think that's, to me, that's not, so did they not do that? Are they not allowed to search, you know, the Federal Firearms Registry or whatever the hell we call that thing? Are they not allowed to search that? And so to me, a cursory look reveals a kid with the same last name in Florida has purchased an AR-15 6 months previous to this.
Yeah.
Well, he just got my attention. So, I mean, to me, I put that in an email. I fire it off to whatever, the Broward County FBI office, and say, you might want to pass this to locals. This is the chain. And then if some local gets it, and all he does is contact, his family, he's, you know, the whole thing blows up. So I don't know, and I'm still doing some research on whether the FBI can have access to that database when they get this guy's name. And so I'm sympathetic. Look, I know they get a ton of this stuff, but they did take it seriously enough because they went out and they visited the guy. And so to me, to sit down and do a database search, and when you do the database search, he'd already bought the AR-15, that would have popped up. And so to me, those two pieces of evidence take you to wherever it takes you. I don't know if that's armchair quarterbacking on my part. But it's pretty painful when
you have a very unique perspective on the whole situation, Mac. And I respect and I listen to you when you speak about this stuff. And I'm glad that you do.
I don't know. I think mine's akin to a lot of parents. I think Kim, again, there's so many weapons in the country. I don't, you know, we can enact a law that says, no more semiotic weapons, but I can take, and do what the guy in Las Vegas did, which all he does is get a file out and he files a part of the trigger mechanism and he turns a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon. And so people that want to do this stuff, in my opinion, in a country where there's 300 million weapons, is gonna find a way. And that's why, to me, the only thing you're left with is you have to fortify your schools. You have to make them stronger. You can't allow them to be targets. And I know people are going to say, oh, that's awful and that's sad. Well, what else are you going to do? Rely on Congress to act some kind of mental health law? They're not doing that. You know, are we going to then say, even if we tighten up gun control laws, you know, there's a black market for it. There's ghost guns. And then there's buying what you would tell me is that's a legitimate semi-automatic weapon. All right. It's not an automatic weapon. Okay. But I buy from Korea. I buy this part for it. And then from Korea, I also buy a 100-round drum magazine. Now, all that's outlawed in the United States, but I can buy it, you know, I can buy it on the World Wide Web and have it sent to me. So I don't, again, I'm looking around for a legitimate solution to these kind of things. And I think the only one is you got to have people with guns at schools, as sad as it is, and they've got to be there to confront people. And I wish I saw another solution. And again, I have a 14-year-old daughter, right?
Of course you do. Now, what about Vegas? You know, how do you stop something like that?
I don't think you do. I mean, think about. I mean, look at what that guy did, Kim. I mean, he was diabolical, crazy, calculating. I mean, he scrubbed all of his electronic stuff, and so they still don't have a motive for it. They still don't have a motive. Now, I would tell you this: maybe hotels and Vegas in particular, I think, will lead the way with metal detectors.
Yeah,
you know, for your luggage. But again, if
that would be swell.
You know, again, but Vegas's livelihood. I mean, God forbid they should have another event like that. I mean, then all that investment of all those corporations goes right down. And again, also the security piece in Vegas, people want to see that. It's not like we're, you know, look, every time we get on an airplane, you know, you get the, you go through all this stuff. You're x-rayed, you're searched before you get on an airplane. It's not like we're not used to it anymore. But anyway, so I don't know. I just don't see another realistic course of action. And you'll even get pushback from that. Well, that's too much money. We're going to hire how many security guards? I don't know, 3, 4. They're going to be a visible presence. They're going to be a visible presence. Oh, the school district can't afford that. Bullshit, man.
The government can. How about metal detectors at every school entrance, and figure out how do you can get a metal detector that when the doors open, the kids come in the school, you know, there's 4 or 6 doors that open up, that somehow there's metal detectors.
Every time I go watch the Kings play hockey at the Staples Center, I go through a metal detector.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, maybe that's just going to be a fact of life that every day you go to school,
than fences and you can still have, plain clothes patrolmen in the hallways or
Kim,
at the doors.
Kim, I think move. You're hearkening, you're hearkening.
I'm still against fences around school.
Yeah, get used to it, man.
It takes me back to the inner cities with the fences. It just makes my stomach curl.
I don't see that shit. Yeah, but if you
don't,
if you can't be kids anymore. Well, they can't be. They're getting killed in school.
Yeah. Well, I'm putting up the Texas in there.
Yeah, what's that going to do?
Well, okay. Build walls around schools. Yeah,
You don't have a choice, though. You know what one of the hottest selling items is right now? Bulletproof backpack. I'm going to buy my kid a backpack that is bulletproof, so if they get shot at, they can hide behind their backpack. It's pretty stunning.
Good.
Pretty stunning. So, and again, I don't like the idea that you have to put up these fences and secure your schools like that. But I'll tell you what, we've had 24 of these since Columbine happened. And I don't know in our culture where the idea came from that I'm hurting, my life sucks, so I'm going to go kill a bunch of innocent people that I don't even know. Where does that come from? I don't know. And it's how does that? Here's an email on guns. The Virginia Tech shooter used a pistol. Columbine killers used two shotguns, a pistol, and a 9mm carbine. The Norfolk Navy Yard shooter used a shotgun. Most school shootings are done with pistols. I don't know. It's sad. Okay, you want to talk food? What's your favorite junk food?
Favorite junk food, probably potato chips. The kettle chips, crunchy.
What flavor?
Some kind of dip that Beth makes.
What kind of flavor?
Oh, just plain. I don't like flavored chips.
You don't like flavored chips?
Well, I do, but there's so much shit in them. I know you're a beacon of physical health.
Thank you. I'm not.
And I shouldn't eat any chips at all.
They're so good, though.
Kettle chips with under 100, you know, under 90 sodium in it. And then I can justify eating them. But I don't eat them all the time. And then Beth will make a ranch or a clam dip or a artichoke dip. That would be my favorite way to roll with that.
I like the kettle chips with pepper on them. Black pepper.
Yeah.
I like those.
The sea salt and pepper?
Yeah. I like those.
Yeah.
There's not too many potato chips that I don't like. I'm also a fan of just the regular salty ass Lay's potato chips, you know, in the yellow bag. That's my classic.
Yellow bag, Lay's and red. Yeah, I gotcha. Look, I've never met a potato chip I didn't like. Let me put it that way. But being a responsible adult, that's an oxymoron.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the flavor of the kettle chips because when I was growing up, my aunt, when I went over to her house, used to make me an egg salad sandwich with these chips that were made in Pennsylvania called UTZ.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, UTZ. It's huge.
They were crunchy. That's my first experience with kettle chips. And that's been my favorite. Just salted kettle chip. With an egg salad sandwich. I'm in hog heaven.
Yeah, I guess
the egg salad made with Hellman's mayonnaise.
Hellman's mayonnaise, holy smokes.
Yeah.
Probably the junk food that I eat the most is M&M's, peanut M&M's.
Yeah.
If I
well, that's another thing. Chocolate for me is to die for.
Really?
But you know, with the sugar content, my diabetes, it's like a plague. So I pace myself with eating chocolate. And, you know, we've got Widmans in Grand Forks, North Dakota. We're just like about 200 yards from my front door. And they make their own chocolate, everything. So it's quite a distraction sometimes, especially Wednesday, which I avoid going in there. But, yeah.
The
M&M's are great.
What,
and Jelly Bellies. Oh, my God. You don't like Jelly Bellies?
No, I don't. I don't like any of that stuff. Widmans is, for those of you who certainly don't know, George Widman was a fought in World War II as a pilot.
Yeah.
I believe he was a naval aviator in World War II in the Pacific. And he came back and he opened a candy store, and his signature product was a chocolate-covered potato chip.
He became world-renowned for those.
Called the Chipper.
Yeah. Yeah, baby. I might have to go get a little. I'll send you a box.
And you can tell from the response that the Delmarine Radiohead chef is a fan of it. Is a fan of it. All right. So... now, a couple of All-Marine Radio fans are participating in the Olympics. Monique and Jocelyn Lamoureux lost to the Canadians the other night. Have you been watching?
Yeah, that's a nice fight at the end, too.
Yeah, they're not afraid to...
Did you see that?
The girls are not afraid to get it kicking.
Listen, those Lamoureux women, they grew up playing with boys because there weren't girls' hockeys when they were kids, so they had to play with boys till high school, and they still would have kicked the boys' butts in high school if they would have been allowed to play. And this is their third Olympics, and I am so excited for them, but they had a whole different attitude about losing to Canada last Olympics. I think it was overtime. And they lost 2-1, but I still think they're going to win the gold this year.
Well, they've lost to Canada 6 out of 7 times.
Yeah. What? I just have a feeling that this is not the time they're going to lose when it comes to the gold medal.
I thought they outplayed the Canadians. The Canadians scored a goal. One shot that was just wired, another one on a scramble in front of the net, and then the United States, I don't know, they hit like 3 posts or something like that. But I thought the Americans
got Canada 47-25 for
right,
race 6.
Right. So we'll see the gold medal game. Maybe this is the year that they beat the Canadians. And here's the funny thing: in the World Championships, the United States that gets played in the non-Olympic years, the United States has won like 7 out of 8 world championships, and they can't beat the Canadians in the Olympics. So
I bet they do this year.
How about White Castle hamburgers? Are you a fan of those things?
Are you kidding me? I think I had my first onion on a bun when I was about 14. There was a White Castle in Hamilton, Ohio. And, yeah, I love them. And you couldn't, you know, just like a potato chip, you just can't eat one. You have to eat anywhere from 3 to 6 at one sitting. Otherwise, you know, you miss the flavor. I loved watching them being made. Very cool. Very cool.
For those of us who didn't grow up with White Castle, they're small, right? How big are they?
Oh, yeah, they're about... maybe, I don't know, maybe 2 inches wide. You know, they look like a dinner roll.
So it's like a bite size. It's like a bite size hamburger.
Yeah, you get two, maybe three bites out of it if you're delicate. Yeah.
Wow.
Very good. And if you watch them make, the hamburgers have holes in them to let the steam through. Little needle marks, but you can really see through them. And they throw the onions down they throw the hamburger down, then they throw the onions down on the hamburger, and then they flip them over, and then they put them on the bun. And that's it, baby. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever had White Castle. I don't recall it if I did. And I remember being in the South, and it was seeing those White Castle joints all over the place.
Oh, they're all over the New York, Chicago. Yeah, I thought you could get a White Castle everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know.
I
that
figured if Hamilton, Ohio had White Castle, they got it everywhere.
I think it was predominantly Midwest and East Coast. I don't know that it got out to the West Coast. Anyway, all right. Well, any big plans for the weekend? What's the weather like in the Northern Plains? It got cold again, yes?
Well, at Valentine's Day, it was almost 40 degrees.
40?
And then the next day, it was 12 below. yesterday, it was very cold. Today it was, I woke up to 2 below. It's going to heat up to 24. And you know that they're weird out here when they say, oh yeah, we're getting a little warming spell. It's going to be up in the mid 20s today.
Yeah. And you know what?
And I think if anybody anywhere south of North Dakota hears this on the radio, they think, those guys are freaking crazy.
Well, you know, one of the things that happened with you when I lived there that would happen on an annual basis is, you know, so in the late fall, early winter, you know, it gets to be 20 degrees and you're cold and you think, how the hell could I ever think 20 was warm? And then you go into the deep freeze. And then it gets to 20, and you're like, yeah, 20 degrees, living the good life.
Yesterday, it was like 6 or 7, and the winds were going 20 to 40 miles an hour. So that's called a wind chill, folks, wind chill factor. And it was like 25 below zero. And it's cold. But
that's
hey,
cool.
Get used to it.
Keeps the riffraff out.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. That's exactly what they say. All right, sir. A little bit too serious today, but I know you have thoughts about it. So.
Well, thank you for asking and sharing it with me. Let's just hope that things get better, but I do want to start getting ready for Easter supper, and in the next couple of weeks, it's only 3 weeks away. So
we'll talk about.
I'm thinking a baked ham.
Ham.
Yeah, baked ham or lamb, leg of lamb. And it's not prime rib, and it's which we love, but it's, you know, springtime and everywhere but here, and lamb and or ham are the two main dilly bobs for dinner with the trimmings. So we'll start discussing that, and I'll send you some recipes to post.
All right. You have a good weekend. Thank you.
You too. Take care, everybody.
All right.
Thank you very much for listening. Appreciate it.
There you have it. The All Marine Radio head chef, P. Kimball Holmes. We're going to take a break. We come back. More of this program. Gunner's going to join us. Don't touch that dial.